So thank you guys for coming. In case you're wondering, a cheetah would be my spirit animal, just in case. Since I didn't send it in the introduction. Okay, so I'll just get right into it here. So some of the objectives that I want to cover in my presentation is talking about Wisconsin enhanced arboviral disease surveillance, and then describe some of the features of our Powassan virus patients, and then talk about where Powassan virus has been documented in Wisconsin ticks. And so a little background on Powassan virus. It is a rare tick-borne flavivirus. It was initially isolated in 1958 from a resident of Powassan, Canada. And since that time, infections have been reported in residents of Russia and the United States as well. There are two lineages of Powassan virus, lineage 1 or prototype Powassan virus, and lineage 2 deer tick virus. And both have been documented in the United States. And genetic sequencing is needed to determine the two lineages. Antigen or antibody tests alone cannot determine. And so there have been at least 38 small and medium-sized mammals that have been documented as reservoirs for Powassan virus. The main vectors are Ixodes scapularis and Ixodes cuccii, although it has also been documented in other Ixodes species and dermacentor ticks as well. A study with mice has shown that transmission can happen in as little as 15 minutes, which is much shorter than many other tick-borne diseases that can take hours to days of tick attachment in order to transmit the disease. So public health interventions like tick checks, which usually happen hours after tick attachment, is not going to be very effective at preventing Powassan virus infections. And so some of the clinical manifestations, the incubation period is 21 days, which is with a range of 8 to 34 days. And then acute onset includes things like fever, muscle weakness, joint pains, body aches, very nonspecific symptoms. And then severe signs and symptoms include symptoms related to meningitis and encephalitis. And then meningoencephalitis can result in long-term neurologic sequelae. Approximately 10 to 15% of cases are fatal. So looking at the United States specifically, the first infection was in a New Jersey resident in 1970. And then the first infection in a Wisconsin resident was in 2003. Powassan virus typically affects residents of the Midwest and Northeast. The three main states are Minnesota, New York, and Wisconsin. And so then, since Wisconsin has such a high percentage of Powassan virus cases in the United States, we wanted to investigate these further. And so we used the CST case definition with one minor modification, which I will point out. So the CST classifies Powassan cases as neuroinvasive or non-neuroinvasive. Neuroinvasive, you need a fever along with meningitis, encephalitis, or some of these other neurological signs described here, and in addition to an absence of a more likely clinical explanation. In Wisconsin, we will still classify it as a neuroinvasive disease even if there is not a fever, because sometimes a patient might not get to the doctor in time for the fever to be documented, and with some of the neurologic deficits, they might not report that they had a fever, so we will still classify it as neuroinvasive. And then non-neuroinvasive is a fever with absence of the neuroinvasive disease signs and absence of a more likely clinical explanation. And then the laboratory criteria includes virus isolation or a four-fold change in titer or virus-specific IgM antibodies in serum with confirmatory neutralizing antibodies in the same or later specimen. And then also virus-specific IgM antibodies in CSF is also confirmatory. So then a confirmed neuroinvasive disease is neuroinvasive clinical signs, along with the confirmatory testing. And the one addition on this slide is that if it's the IgM in CSF, they have to have negative IgM results for other arboviruses endemic to where the person resides. And then non-neuroinvasive, basically the same thing, only with non-neuroinvasive clinical signs. And then the probable for both neuroinvasive and non-neuroinvasive, the main difference is that they didn't have the additional testing for the IgM antibodies in CSF for additional arboviruses in their area. So then that's what we use for our case definition and how we actually detect these Powassan virus cases is starting in 2002 with the first human outbreak of West Nile virus in Wisconsin residents. Wisconsin Division of Public Health began confirming all reported positive or equivocal arbovirus-specific IgM antibody tests by requesting patient specimens and having them retested at the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene, and then all samples with positive or indeterminate results at the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene reported to the CDC. The main reason here is that the CDC can run tests for Powassan virus and Jamestown Canyon virus, which commercial labs and the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene cannot. And these samples were requested, the patient had to have compatible clinical signs, and then if the patient was confirmed or probable, we requested medical records and interviewed the patient. And so that was from 2002 to 2009. And then beginning in 2010, because we started having concern over cross-reacting IgM antibodies between Powassan virus, West Nile virus, and St. Louis encephalitis virus, in addition to possibility of broad cross-reactive IgG results among arboviruses in commercial tests, we started requesting additional testing for specimens from some patients with severe illness that met the clinical criteria for arboviral infection. Specimens that were positive or equivocal for arbovirus-specific IgG antibodies, but IgM negative, were targeted. And so then this protocol was expanded in 2013 to include not just the most severe cases, but all cases that had clinical criteria with the right test results. And then previously, these labs that were IgG positive but IgM negative would have been classified as a previous infection and not a current infection. And so because that can be a little confusing in words, I made a little flowchart as to how this all happens. So a positive arboviral IgG result is entered into WEDS, which is Wisconsin's electronic disease surveillance program. And then a phone call is made to the patient's provider to obtain clinical symptoms. And then if the clinical symptoms match an arboviral infection, then the phone call to the commercial lab where the patient was tested to see if they have enough specimen and if the specimen is still available. If it is, the specimen is forwarded to the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene and CDC for arboviral testing. And then once the Wisconsin Division of Public Health receives the results, then it is classified as confirmed, probable, or not a case. And then finally, for all the confirmed and probable results, the patients are interviewed, medical records are requested, and the physician is contacted if needed. So that was our follow-up and our surveillance in humans. So for ticks, in 2013, we had some active tick surveillance for Powassan virus in Wisconsin. We partnered with the University of Wisconsin Medical Entomology Laboratory to conduct tick drags in May of 2013 at a county park in Marathon County, Wisconsin. And we mainly targeted adult Ixodes scapularis, and then they were frozen and then shipped to the CDC Arboviral Disease Branch for RT-PCR testing for both lineages of Powassan virus. They also did plaque assays and viral sequencing. And so then, this is the data from our Powassan virus cases. So since 2003, we've had 17 confirmed and one probable case. And as you can see from this graph, starting in 2010, when we started doing some more enhanced surveillance, we started picking up many more cases per year than previously. And then 8 out of the 18 patients reported symptom onset in June, which is typically when we see the nymphal tick life stage most active and abundant. And this is also pretty typical of other tick-borne diseases in Wisconsin. And then our patient age range was 2 to 76 with a mean of 55, with the majority of the cases being older adults, which is also pretty typical of tick-borne disease in Wisconsin. So the majority of our patients were male, had neuroinvasive disease. 15 were hospitalized with a range of 1 to 17 days. 5 were admitted into the ICU, and 4 required intubation. There was one that had a possible exposure out of state in Minnesota, but 17 only had in-state exposure. The most common clinical signs and symptoms reported by patients were fever, headache, lethargy, fatigue, body aches, nausea, confusion, chills, and memory deficits. This is a map that shows where patients diagnosed with Powassan virus resided, and to give some context, where the tick drags that I described previously were performed by the STAR. And as you can see, the tick drags were performed in Marathon County, which has the highest number of cases per county. And the majority of cases resided in central and northwestern Wisconsin, which is where the greatest risk of tick-borne disease in Wisconsin is. And once again, these are counties of residence and not necessarily counties of exposure. many patients had traveled to several counties within Wisconsin and had possible outdoor exposure within the possible time period to pick up Powassan virus. So pinpointing a county of exposure was very difficult, especially because Ixodes scapularis, the main vector that we think for Powassan virus in Wisconsin, is pretty much endemic throughout the whole state now. And so the results from the tick drag that took place in May of 2013, they collected a total of 115 adult Ixodes scapularis ticks from the park, and then three were positive for Powassan virus lineage 2, or deer tick virus. And right now it is uncertain if Powassan virus lineage 1 is present in Wisconsin. To date, it has not been detected, but lineage 1 is more present in Ixodes cuckii, which is mainly found on woodchucks and not as actively as a quester as Ixodes scapularis. So some conclusions. We had a higher number of reported cases of Powassan virus since 2010. It was probably previously underdiagnosed before we had this enhanced surveillance. And like I said, this increase is probably due to that enhanced surveillance that we are picking up. And then there's a lower case fatality rate compared to national studies. And this might be due to we're detecting milder cases from our enhanced surveillance, or that is due to we have infection with deer tick virus, which has been speculated to cause milder disease than lineage 1. And then the features, clinical features and geographic and demographic trends fit other tick-borne diseases in Wisconsin. Some of the limitations of our surveillance, it is a very time and resource intensive, so there needs to be funding for it. And then commercial tests, the commercial labs don't save the samples very long, so we need to be very timely on requesting samples if we actually want to for them for additional testing. And then the start of the surveillance is based on providers actually testing for arboviruses to begin with. And so some recommendations: we need to keep this enhanced surveillance to detect Powassan and other arboviruses in Wisconsin. And we think that this is a model that could be used by other states for arboviral surveillance. And then further studies need to be done to evaluate the long-term sequelae from Powassan virus patients to understand the total public health impact. And then we need to continue doing environmental tick studies to determine Powassan virus distribution, lineage present, and tick infectivity percentage in Wisconsin. And I'd like to acknowledge these people at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, the Centers for Disease Control, and the University of Wisconsin Medical Entomology Laboratory. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jordan. Does anybody have any questions, Jordan?
Katie Brown, Stable Health, Massachusetts. We also have brought on testing for Powassan virus and are starting to see an increase, so I think it's under-recognized. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things we discovered is that we haven't had as many cases identified as you, but in two of the six cases that were identified in the last couple of years, they had Jamestown Canyon co-infection. And I was just wondering, these were individuals who spent large amounts of time outside, and so we mm-hmm. think were exposed like to all vectors everywhere.
Right.
So I was just wondering if you had seen anything similar in your patients. Were they high risk for tick exposure at all, or?
Some of them are active hunters, active outdoorsmen, and we did also have one co-infection that I did not bring up, and I believe Zip can correct me if I'm wrong. Was it Jamestown Canyon? Yes, we did have one. Yes. Yes. So yeah.
You have any other questions for Jordan?
Oh, come on. I'm okay with that.
So I have a question.
Okay.
I was wondering. I was trying to understand. You showed a map of your cases and mm-hmm. then where you dragged. I was wondering where you dragged in relation to where the cases were found. I know they were scattered a bit,
right?
And how big of an area you dragged to find? That's quite a good lot of Ixodes. When we drag mm-hmm. in Virginia, well, I say we, I have nothing to do with it, but we find a ton of Lone Star ticks. We have a ton of Lone Star ticks in Virginia, but we struggle sometimes to find goodly numbers of Ixodes, even though we know we have diseases that Ixodes carry.
Right.
Could you give us a perspective on that?
Ixodes is very easy to come by in Wisconsin. Very, very easy. to give, I didn't participate in that specific drag, but one that I did participate in, there was, I think, about 8 of us dragging for a total of 10 hours over 2 days, and we got over 300 exotes.
And how big of an area were you?
It was a pretty decent, we did it in 2 locations, and I'd probably say we probably covered maybe 2 acres, I would say, in the 2 different places, so. They're everywhere.
I can help Jordan a little bit. When we partner with the Wisconsin Department of Entomology, they actually hire students, limited term undergrad entomology students. She's a professor at the UW, so she has this great ability to recruit students from her classes. And what they did was they also were doing surveillance for some of their other projects. And so they had a team of about 10 students that we had decided, because of limited resources and funding and kits and reagents testing, we had decided that since they were going to be in that area, that we would like for them to pick up ticks just specifically for Powassan. We also have other tick-borne diseases that they were surveying for us, like for Lake Amuris Lake and the new Borrelia species that we're investigating. And so those type of tick-borne disease pathogens, they have to, they usually preserve them differently in alcohol. But with these, they actually had to bring CO2 and freeze them right away so that they could preserve the RNA. And so what the students did was they pretty much had to break up in groups of 2, and they just kind of spread out, picked up the ticks, and save them separately, divide them up. And the criteria is that nobody gets to leave the park until they get at least 100 adult ticks. Okay. So I think they actually started from 7 in the morning and didn't get done until like 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And that's a signed contract. The force field is up.
They're very passionate. Okay. The person who kind of coordinated this was very passionate about this project. So.
No, we're just going to have to institute that in Virginia. We haven't played hardball like that yet, so we're just going to have to do something. Well, thank you very much, Jordan.